Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable of the panel. I feel like I'm playing Twister, for God's sakes. Good morning. Welcome to the program. It's the 10th of July. It's a Monday, and it's a delight to be with you. When last Alan and I met, we were at Tanglewood. Excuse me, right. On Friday morning.
What a great place.
We just want to thank them.
Yeah.
They're absolutely wonderful people, and we had a great, great time on Friday. So, and if you missed it, it's online.
Right. I spent very late last night writing my column for the Berkshire Eagle on our experience at Tanglewood. Andres Nelson's, what a phenomenal talent he is.
Great stuff.
We saw the Mahler second the other night.
Resurrection.
Resurrection. Very nice. Very nice.
Do you have everybody, do you have an announcement to make, sir?
Yes. I just wanted to send our best wishes to one of WAMC's great friends, Arlo Guthrie, who has a 70th birthday.
I remember
when he was 12 years old in that film.
Wow.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you.
Everybody just says,
that means I'm here.
Yeah, that's right. That's how that goes. All right. Well, let me introduce the panel to you. And again, very nice to have everyone with us. Hope you had a lovely weekend. Most of the weather was nice, so I hope you enjoyed it. Alan Chartok is here, of course. We have our a communications consultant and a regular panelist on Monday is Teresa Bourgeois is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a political consultant and who also is here each and every Monday. Libby Post is with us.
Good morning.
And as if that were not enough, in the billboard I promised that we would have a special guest panelist, and I didn't say the name because I wasn't sure whether we could actually make the phone call or not. But we got through, and I believe the next voice that you hear will be the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, who is currently in Amman, Jordan, working for the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project 1, Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. It's true. These are my dulcet tones from far away.
Well, how did that happen?
I don't know. I have two Muslim friends in the room with me, and they offered to sing the call to prayer and to say hi in Arabic, but we were afraid we would be reported on WRGB's terror alert.
And why would that be, Rosemary?
Well, that could certainly be the case.
Well, not to steer the conversation from the get-go, but I have just discovered myself that WRGB is now a Sinclair station. And they have made a deal with the Trump campaign for what they called straighter coverage, which meant they agreed to conditions set up by Trump to cover him. They wouldn't comment on what he had to say and run his stuff straight. And they run a terror alert. They're required every station to run a terror alert that has nothing to do with terror most times, but is simply about being Muslim. John Oliver did a fabulous story on them, and I hope people will take a look at it.
All right. So Rosemary wrote to me last week and not surprisingly has a lot to say about the G20.
Everybody has a lot to say about the G20.
So we want to talk about that. We weren't on Friday. Well, we were on Friday, but we didn't have our typical panel. So
out to Tanglewood.
So the Alan. So here's the deal. We'll have you set this up. So Trump minimizes hacking allegations and seeks to move forward with Russia. He said on Sunday, looking to move past allegations of Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election, effectively dismissing the importance of the intelligence community's definitive conclusion about a foreign adversary in pursuit of a collaborative partnership with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
As much as we can, we know that the Russians did what they have been accused of by our intelligence agencies. We do know that Comey was fired, and that the FBI director, and that shortly after firing him, there was a meeting between Trump and the Russian ambassador, in which he said, "Okay, I fired Comey; he's a nut job, and now the pressure will be off on the Russian thing." Now, come on. One and one is two. Now, this morning we hear that Junior, he's being referred to as Junior, Donald Trump Junior, has done, was at a meeting in which he brought Manafort and Kushner, and the idea was, and he's admitting it, that they were going to get intelligence, bad intelligence about Hillary Clinton from them, and that it only lasted 20 or 30 minutes. Why did they speak to, why did Junior talk to the New York Times? They saw it coming, and Libby, you're the communications consultant, and they say, that's Teresa.
Right.
Get it out front as fast as you can,
right.
On your terms rather than have somebody else release it.
Right. No, it's true. I mean, they are trying to do some damage control from a crisis communications point of view. But it's from my perspective, given everything that's gone on, it just adds fuel to the fire for Robert Mueller and the investigation that's going on.
Sure.
So,
that's right.
You know, I mean, these people, Donald Trump Jr. is, you know, I think Ivanka holds the cards in that family, to be quite honest with you. I mean, he has said things that are truly incriminating.
Is he the one who said that they got all the money they needed for their investments? From I didn't know whether that was him or the other one.
Yeah, they don't let the other one speak at all.
Eric. And Donald, yes. Yeah. Rosemary, what do you make of all this?
I think Libby is right that he's speaking a whole lot out of turn. Just like his father, he says things he doesn't have to that gets him into more trouble. I continue to be amazed, I was going to say impressed, but that sounds like a good thing, that 35% of the country or more still finds Donald Trump to be doing a great job, and this drip, drip, drip of incriminating information, they just see as the work of a biased media. The media is doing right now is impressing that part of the population. If we fire people who make a mistake because they made a mistake and that's bad, that is just proof of fake news. And if we don't fire them, they go, oh, it's fake news. So how do you get through it all? I worry a lot about, well, I worry about everything, our country, the fate of the planet, and definitely what's happening with media.
Teresa.
Well, I was interested to see how Fox News covered this story. And you can understand if people just watch Fox News, you know, you can get an understanding of their perspective, because they covered it in the context of, did the Clinton folks set this up? You know, who asked for this meeting? Did the Democratic operatives put this Russian woman up to meeting with them?
I know. Are you
it was
kidding?
No, it was unbelievable. And they talked
that's
about
that's in the Times today too. The New York Times had that today. That's the spin being
that's
put
their
on
spin.
By the Republicans.
Right? Did they set it up? And then they also said that Kushner and Manafort had disclosed this meeting previously. But what they didn't note is that they had not originally disclosed it. They only disclosed it on revised disclosure forms well after the fact, presumably when they were asked mm-hmm. about it. And I also thought it was interesting that in the stories, President Trump's lawyers distance him from the meeting. But remember that President Trump said, you know, nobody ever met with the Russians. So it started with nobody ever met with the Russians.
He's a liar.
And Donald Trump mm-hmm. in March, he said, I never met with any Russians on campaign issues. On Saturday, he said it was about adoption. And after this story came out on Sunday, he said that, you know, she said she had damaging information on Clinton. So but you wonder, in reading the official statement that Donald Jr. put out, there's some paragraphs in that that are really incriminating. So you wonder, does
like
he have his own lawyer?
Like what, Teresa?
Well, when he says, we met with the Russians to try to get information on Hillary Clinton, you know, is that the collusion that people are talking about? I'm not a lawyer. I don't know. But that's what people are raising.
And that comes after, back to the Fox News issue, that comes after Ryan Priebus was on Fox News Sunday morning saying that the meeting was a, quote, big nothing burger.
Mm-hmm. Where did that phrase come from?
I don't know.
It's being used too much.
Well, yes. They were talking about issues of foreign policy, issues related to our place in the world, issues important to the American people. That is not unusual.
Well, it's also not terribly unusual to get dirt from they all do negative research. But they don't usually do it
from
themselves.
From the Russians?
No, whatever, from anybody.
From the Russians in the midst of this
issue? You're not going to hang me up on this. I couldn't agree with you more. I think the whole thing's disgusting.
No, actually, yeah. I'm asking you because I thought about this. I was trying to think about this yesterday in the context of a campaign. I'm not challenging. I'm just saying, would you do it from the Russians? Because campaign people have meetings with people all the time. Now, would a campaign manager and top campaign operatives meet with a Russian person? And he says in his statement, I was not told her name prior to the meeting. Why would Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort go into a meeting with somebody that they don't know the name and the person's a Russian?
Yeah.
There's some irony in the background of this meeting, which is brushed over in the Times report and others that I looked at. The whole adoption thing seems random.
It's not random.
It's not at all. No, Putin instituted the ban on Russian adoptions in retaliation for the United States that enacted the Sergei Magnitsky Act, and it refused to let certain thugs from Russia come into the United States. And this was in retaliation for a horrible case about Sergei Magnitsky, who was a Russian. He was a whistleblower. And he does an audit on a company, and he finds out that there's this massive theft going on from Russian companies.
Right.
I'm sorry, from Russian government, from the tax department. And he goes like a good citizen to the Russians, and he says, hey, look at what's going on here. Look at all these millions we're losing. And what they did was turn around, because, of course, they were involved in it, and they put him in jail for the theft. He died in jail. He was not treated. He had a heart condition. He dies. He is a martyr, and that set this whole thing off. So there's a very rich irony to me that this whistleblower who was framed is now the source of a meeting in which the Republicans seem plainly to be at fault. The Trump campaign seems plainly to be at fault to those of us who are not lawyers. And yet it's being twisted that, oh, yeah, this was the Dems set this up. They wanted to get us in trouble.
Unbelievable. Okay, right. But while we're on the subject, so far we have the son-in-law, the son, and all the others.
The campaign manager,
all involved in this thing.
And now, they had said we never met with the Russians.
Yes, but what's interesting to me is, does that really happen? Really happen without the president knowing?
No.
Without Trump at the time knowing? He sends his top people, or his top people go, and he's hands off. I didn't have anything to do with all of this. It defies it. So that when he's standing there and says to the Russian ambassador, you know, we fired Comey, and we fired Comey, and now the pressure is off. What is he talking
about?
Well,
the one thing, the only thing you can use as an example of how he is hands-off is look at what he's doing with the business. He said he was going to have hands-off with the business, and he's done that. He's let the kids run it. No. Okay, no one's going to run that.
That's not true.
Does that prove the point?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to do.
He lied, and that's all he knows how to do. And he lives within this, you know, this whirlwind of lies. And so he doesn't.
Which he
really
did when he was on when he was in the real estate.
Right, right. And so he doesn't have to keep anything straight anymore because it's all a lie.
What'd you say,
I was going to say, you know, lies are fine. You don't get impeached for lies. And I'm not sure you get impeached even if your son and your son-in-law have been acting as your agents. This whole discussion is so like Watergate, where you eventually ended up with his two top aides were involved and were linked to what happened at Watergate, but he did not himself, Nixon himself did not have to leave until he was tied through tapes to knowing what was going on. We still don't have that in Trump.
Are we making too much of Ivanka sitting at the table at the G20?
I thought so. What's the big deal? I like George Takei, who said, I'd rather have Ivanka than him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, maybe. George Takei, actually. Well, but he said that he was hoping that she could at least lead us back into the Paris climate talks. Teresa?
I mean, I think given all of the other challenges of what happened at the G20, really the U.S. isolated 19 countries against one. And you know, I think in the context of all of the other challenges that we face as a country as a result of what happened at the G20, that was minimal. But you do wonder who else was in the room, and was there a government official? Was, you know, who else among the U.S. government officials were in the room that appropriately should have gone to sit in the chair? But it doesn't really matter. Now, I want to step back, and I'm thinking as we're listening, you know, listeners keep saying, the Russians, would you all stop talking about the Russians already? Talk about something that matters in our lives. But we have to step back and realize, why are we talking about the Russians? Why does this matter? And this whole issue of Russian collusion in our elections. And I keep thinking about this meeting and what Brennan said about, and a number of the intelligence community folks in talking about this, and that there were both witting and unwitting participants in this, and that often these Russian operatives are very good at getting engaged with you in a way that you don't know. So maybe they did know, maybe they didn't. But either way, this, I think that we have to really worry about Russian involvement in our election and an administration who's ignoring that.
What were you going to say, Joe?
Well, it also, and it seems, even though he's walking back the statement now, and we've got to take a break just a second, but even though he's walking back the statement, the fact that you say, well, we're going to do a cybersecurity, and guess who's going to partner with us?
Yeah,
the Russians.
What a joke.
We'll
it's
get
like,
down to the bottom of
like
this.
It's like inviting the fox into the hen house. Here, the door is open. Have a feast.
Cut them on.
Well, I think after the Republican leadership,
condiments.
You know, even that it was a, you know, a step too far for the Republican leadership.
We'll take a break and be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post. Plus, on the line from Amman, Jordan, we have Rosemary Armeo with us. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning, everybody.
So how's the work going? Have you regretted your decision yet?
I don't love it yet, but I have a friend who says, you know, you got to do 3 months on any job before you fit in. It's very hard. Long stories, hot weather. I can't, you know, I don't have friends here yet. So
how hot?
93 today. They predicted the heat wave this week, so it's 93 at this moment.
Now, we've been keeping tabs on you via Facebook, and it seems like you're getting around and traveling and seeing all kinds of amazing sights.
Oh, yes, I am. I don't believe in, you know, not taking advantage of being in a place. So the Dead Sea is incredible, just incredible. I was in Tunis last weekend, and it actually rained there. I saw a rainbow. It was like ecstatic after being in the desert. And I have my son and some friends are coming over, and I'm just taking them, I'm dragging them into the desert. It's not the best time of year. They might boil, but, you know, that's when they're here. So off we go.
They
the
might...
scene where they filmed The Martian, you know, the Matt Damon movie, that's here in Jordan. We're going to go there.
Did you float in the Dead Sea?
I did.
Isn't it unbelievable?
Wonderful. Yeah. You get kind of high, you know. It's like filled with minerals and stuff. You get out and you feel euphoric. It's like drugs.
Yeah.
Great.
Cool.
How would you know that? Not good for Rosemary, really. How would you know
all
that?
Right.
Not good for your blood pressure.
We have a couple of letters from Alan, and then we're going to go on to some other topics. Okay. So we won't go too far.
I just want to say that Roselle and I went to Ragtime last night, Barrington Stage. It was fabulous.
Yeah,
just fabulous.
Yeah.
So just thought I'd mention that. Martin says, Rosemary, so good to hear your voice. To answer your question about how to get through the 35% who still think Trump is great, you can't and you won't. Trump said it himself during the campaign. He could publicly commit murder and they would still love him. These people will not be swayed from his side and are a lost cause. We need to focus on getting out the 50% who didn't vote. If they vote the next time, he will lose. Well, even if the 50% don't vote, if 5% who didn't vote,
right,
that would make the difference right there.
And that's why what's going on locally here and across the country is so important. You know, people getting out. I was at an event last night for New York, 19 votes. We had close to 70 people in a very warm house and listened to Paul Tonko.
Is this the 19th congressional district?
Yes, the CD19 people.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are energized to do things and to do voter registration and to get engaged and to work on issues and
that'll
to
make
get
the
good people elected. And that's that's the gift of Donald Trump, you know, as bizarre as it sounds.
And by the way, Politico has been doing fabulous reporting on everybody who is signing up to run for Congress, and some astounding people. One of the problems in many of these districts is everybody wants to run.
No kidding.
You have six or seven people running, and then they beat each other's brains out, and then somebody's mad at somebody else, and you know that could hurt their chances. I just thought I'd mention that.
You're absolutely right.
Okay, so that was from Martin. Thank you, Martin. Joel says, Clinton was impeached for lies under oath. That's right. He was not. For those of you who still don't believe me, impeachment doesn't mean removed. It's what the House, when the House brings political charges, that's what it means. And he was. And who else was impeached in history?
Andrew Johnson.
Andrew Johnson, that's right. And he said, I'm going to home to Baltimore, and you may go too. And then he said the word. Okay. Good morning. Now that our fearless leader and unrivaled real estate mogul has drained the swamp, did he just sell D.C. to the Russians or the whole dang country? Alan, since that's another one. Okay. Mike says, does the panel think if there was collusion in our intelligence community, would have uncovered it already? I think the hysteria is taking attention away from the real rigged election, the one that DNC rigged for Hillary.
Oy.
All right. Yeah, so you send them. We read them.
What are we supposed to do? Relive all of that?
There may or may not have been collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, but there is no question that the Russians interfered with the 2016 election nationally, and that they attempted to
doing Hillary.
With the intent of defeating Hillary Clinton, and also try to interfere state by state with the election process. And we should all, Democrats, Republicans, be very concerned and be working to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Any other president?
It's a global thing, too. They also did the same in Macedonia. They did the same in France. They're attempting to do the same in Germany. This is a global effort that's had a lot of success for Putin.
Very KGB-like. Yes, Rosemary?
Yes, very KGB-like.
The difference is, and Rosemary, you probably know the details better than I on this, but the French responded aggressively against it. The Germans are responding aggressively against it. The difference is that the U.S. is not.
I read there's a country in Europe, I think it might be one of the Scandinavian countries, that are actually have a grade school curriculum for kids to be able to tell the difference between fake news and real news.
Yeah.
So they're really, Europe is really pushing back against this.
Yeah. But what I'm finding very interesting is the increasing awareness on the Republicans in the House and the Senate that they have to pull away on this. So they have just voted, obviously making Trump very unhappy. What was it, with two dissenting votes, both parties to increase the sanctions on Russia?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the Senate side did. Now, the question is, what's going to happen on the House side?
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
Because there is the Senate now. Republicans are starting to pressure the House Republicans to move on this, particularly after this G20 summit. You saw it over the weekend because the House Republicans are slow walking this.
But the difference, of course, is that the House is an oligarchy and the Senate is only a semi-oligarchy. So the House, if the Speaker doesn't go along with it, it ain't going to happen. Any other president, says Eve, would not be discussing improving relations with Russia, given that the election was hacked by the Russians. I don't hear enough about why Trump is so eager to, quote, improve relations with Russia. It seems incriminating in and of itself. And Eve, you're exactly right.
Well, maybe if we ever see his tax returns, we'll actually get to see the real reason why.
Well, Teresa has some problems with what I just said. Did you?
Well, some would argue that on some issues you do want to have, that you always want to have open dialogue with the Russians. And on some issues we do need to work together. But to work together effectively.
On cybersecurity, for example.
No.
It's absurd.
It's absurd. It's beyond absurd. It's just stunningly odd. But you have a situation in Syria where in some parts of the country we're working with them and other parts of the country working against them. You definitely want to have open dialogue on that so that you don't have unintended consequences, something bad happening. Same thing with North Korea. You want to have open dialogue. Sorry, Rosemary.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
No, I can't see your face, so I'm sorry. I don't mean to be interrupting. But whether you think we should be friends or more friendly to Russia than we have been, what Trump did at that conference was diplomatically and from someone who's supposedly so great at the deal, it was terrible.
Right.
He gave up power and a leverage that we had over the Russians by essentially letting Putin off the hook about interfering in the election.
But doesn't it smell?
But before he even got there.
But doesn't it smell like, you know, all of his protestations, we have to do better with the Russians, all the rest of it, sending his or his family going, obviously without his knowledge, to make these conferences with the Russians. It certainly smells like he's in bed with them.
Oh, I think that there's no question about that. And that's why I said his tax returns. I think he owes a tremendous amount of money to Russian banks. And we will never really know that. But what the G20 summit did was our standing as a world leader has now crumbled. And we are no longer seen as a world leader. And this man is just trying to destroy our democracy.
I had a fight over the weekend with somebody who was maintaining to me that the American people are suffering I get that part of it, suffering as a result of this, and I said, no, I really think many of these countries still love the American people. It really is Trump.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
but
they can differentiate.
Yes, and I think they always have been able to differentiate.
Rosemary, what are you finding over there?
Yeah, people here have had bad governments for a long time. They get it that people are not the same as their governments. Actually, though, I find the Jordanians are not anti-Trump enough for me. They typically say, oh, yeah, Trump, he's a joke. But do you think Hillary would be any better? Which you can imagine my reaction to that. Or, well, Hillary's very sneaky. At least with this guy, you see up front what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, they're very polite about it, actually. Jordan has a huge debt to the United States. They get a lot of aid, and there are many ties. And so I don't get a lot of virulent anti-Trumpism here.
And Amy says, it is exhausting and irritating to try to juggle all the insults to democracy, but please don't dismiss Ivanka's visual in Europe. Huh. Truly a message of nepotism and autocracy.
Well,
so, and this,
you know,
morning,
it's a top aide, so you, what do you expect?
And this morning, there was an attack on by the president on Chelsea Clinton, right?
What did he say?
He was
Teresa will bring us up to date. It was in regards to if Chelsea were to sit down for Hillary, if Hillary had won, that.
Yeah, he said if Chelsea Clinton were asked to hold a seat for her mother, as her mother gave our country away, the fake news would say Chelsea for president. So Chelsea responded, "Good morning, Mr. President. It would never have occurred to my mother or my father to ask me, were you giving our country away? Hoping not."
Chelsea has a new book out that I have to buy for my granddaughter, Gemma. It's called She Persisted. So there, I put in a plug, just like Kellyanne did for Ivanka. I put one in for Chelsea.
Right. Yeah. So,
thank you,
Rosemary. What was the view of the G20 from your vantage point?
Not very big news here at all. Not important to. I mean, what did they discuss about the Middle East other than Syria? That I guess that would be the big thing. There's a deal, ceasefire. And Jordan, of course, is right on the border of Syria, and there's some interest in that, but not a lot of faith. It's not not a lot of faith. There have been ceasefires before, and they've fallen apart, and that pretty much is the cynical view here now.
Now, talk about cynicism. I have something to say to you all. I have the thing called the Shartok poll, which is you stand in front of the LOB, the Legislative Office Building, and you ask the first 50 people who pass, what's the G20?
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about, can I ask more?
Yeah.
With Raqqa about to fall and Mosul having just fallen, any talk about that? Because one of the interesting questions, I think, is, so what happens now? I mean, the whole focus was on driving out ISIS, but now if they have what happens, who's in charge. Any discussion of that there? Because it certainly puts...
Yeah, I mean, people follow Iraq here. A lot of Iraqi refugees are here. You'll see cars on the street that, you know, I can't tell the difference, but my friends will say, oh, that's from Baghdad. I would say that the talk is actually more about the horrible cholera that is happening in Yemen. That's another American travesty. Why are we involved there? Cholera is sweeping the entire country. It's awful. There have been thousands of deaths. And the other thing is Syria, which is still falling apart. The ceasefire, I hope that works, you know, for the sake of it. But there's actually work going on that is kind of satisfying to be involved in to help support Syrian journalists. My question was, are there any? You know, it's very, very difficult to write about what's going on there. And Iraq, this has been known. You know, ISIS is failing. They have been losing land in Iraq and in Syria for quite some time. In fact, do you remember, Teresa, when Obama said, hey, we're beating them, they're falling back, and Rich Honan and other Trump supporters just laughed about it, yeah, ha, ha, ha. But the truth is they're becoming more scary now because they don't have land, so they're turning to these long-range attacks like in London and in Paris. So
we're going to take a quick break and leave it there for the moment. Rosemary, we'll be back with Rosemary Romeo, Libby Post, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Chartok. We will be right back after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for the 10th of July. Alan Chartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois, Libby Post, and from Amman, Jordan, joining us via telephone. A fine telephone connection, I will add. Rosemary Armeo, who is with us, and we are very excited that she is here. We'll go for about another 10 minutes, Rosemary, and then we'll
check on how much the phone call is costing.
Yeah, we got to
see how much the bill is.
We
right?
got to see. Suddenly, as we were doing this and having a lot of fun with you, we were thinking, gee, I wonder what this is costing. Remember when you were a kid and you would make the call and all of a sudden your parents would say, do you know how much that cost?
Yeah, I got in a lot of trouble for that
your
once.
Your friend, so I think we're fine, but we'll just double check it.
Rosemary on is priceless.
Yes,
so,
well, that's true.
That's so sweet.
That's true. Yeah, well... It affects our paycheck. So,
we have to try this newfangled thing, Skype. Yeah,
you know,
that
I was just thinking about
well
that.
Too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We have to figure that out.
When you hear the Skype guys on CNN, it ain't so good. It ain't so hot.
Well, on NPR,
it doesn't come off clearly.
Yeah. Well, it's digitized, so you sound like a robot.
Sounds kind of vague.
One of a better word. Many things that we don't want
you. And cell phones, you can get a plan. I have one. Like if I call home on my cell phone, it's $10 for the whole day. I can talk as long as
Whoa.
I want.
Wow, so that's good. Yeah. We'd go for that.
Yeah, that's good.
I authorize that.
You authorize.
So you know what? I still feel like we've been so serious with you. Is there like anything amusing, anything funny, anything culturally inappropriate
that
you can share with us?
Oh my God, I love Jordan. Yes, I have no dearth of material for my Facebook posting. Every day at my desk, someone comes up and says, it is a tradition, which I've come to see is Arabic for take out your wallet. So, like, we're ordering food. It is traditional. Give me a dinar. Or the other day it was, we need 100 dinars, which is like $140. And that is because they have something called a jamaya. And it's like a Christmas club is what I figure. You put in money. You put in 100 dinar a month. And after 6 months, you can take it out again in a lump sum. Supposedly. And I said, is this like a lottery? Is it gambling? They go, it's halal gambling. So they're very funny. Everybody here is amusing. The food is awesome. I'm getting fatter and fatter. I came during Ramadan, which is fasting all day long. So they wait until iftar when the sun goes down, and then there's a feast. And like every night there's a feast, and there's special sweets, and there's special soups, and I've tried them all. A food writer for the Times Union is trying to get over here so that she can stay with me and just do a column from Jordan. So, yes, I'm having a lot of fun.
Good. All right, so last call. We're going to talk about one more topic, and then we'll take a break, and we'll say goodbye to Rosemary, and then we'll figure out the next time that you come on. But I do want to talk. I mean, we've been making some passing jokes about this this cybersecurity pact with Russia. Lawmakers say they were dumbfounded, and now the president, I believe the latest tweet
took it back.
Said that he wouldn't do anything. But what did he say, Teresa? That it would be he said he wouldn't. Of course, he wouldn't do that. But at least.
Hold on 1 second, pulling okay. it up. I had it up and I just left it.
I did too, and my apologies.
Bear with me. Sorry, I had it right here. Sorry.
But the point being that he walked it back. And I assume that comes from the great concern from his Republican and Democratic colleagues, but certainly the Republican colleagues, who were dumbfounded.
To say nothing of the so-called spooks in the government who were probably not all that happy about the thing.
Rosemary?
He just ruined the whole idea, I think. What is his idea of cybersecurity if having Putin on it is part of it? I don't want him involved in it at all. Please leave it to NASA, to NSA, or to, the intelligence community.
Exactly.
He said his second tweet was, "The fact that President Putin and I discussed a cybersecurity unit doesn't mean I think it can happen. It can't, but a ceasefire can and did." Now, this is after he tweeted the day before that it was going to happen, and his spokespeople went on the Sunday shows defending him.
Talk about triple talk.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what does he mean by a ceasefire?
In Syria, I think he's just trying to deflect.
Oh, okay, so nothing to do with cybersecurity.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to deflect. It has nothing to do with that.
So then how do you move forward on if the president is saying that it's time to move on, we're going to move, not that he has ever taken this situation seriously, but so now we have the meeting that's taken place between the United States and Russia. So how do we move forward for the rest of us who are concerned that there was interference in the election?
Go ahead, Rosemary. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say you don't. And when he says move on, that's code for, hey, forget about it.
That's what it
and,
is.
And that's fine. I think a lot of people are getting bored by the story. You've had some of your listeners who have told you that. But the truth is that justice takes a long, long time, and that's grinding on. And the FBI investigation continues, and that will come up again. Don't forget Watergate was 2 years.
Yep.
These things don't happen quickly.
Yep.
Right. His first tweet was, "Putin and I discussed forming an impenetrable cybersecurity unit so that election hacking and many other negative things will be guarded."
And then, of course, there's the whole issue of the Democrats. Now, the Democrats don't want this, as we've just been talking about, to peak too early, because you got the 2018 elections coming on, and they want it to peak just about before that happens. So I think they bear some responsibility here, too.
Okay. So I was going to ask you about this, Alan. So
Teresa is making bad eyes about this.
Okay,
No. I'm wondering what they haven't done that they could do that you're thinking about.
Okay. Here's an example. Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm sure there are lots of them. What would you think they should do?
So Chuck Schumer has a press conference over the weekend on snorting chocolate. Now, okay.
Apparently a very serious problem.
Yes, it is. It's horribly serious.
Yeah.
But, shouldn't you be going after what's happening here? Shouldn't that be what's at the forefront?
No, and by the way, several congressional leaders, I wish I could name them all, have said, let this thing take its course.
Mm-hmm.
Let this thing take its course. And what they mean by that is too early. We don't want it to go away.
Well, I guess we can't forget that there are two separate things having to do with the Russian interference. One is
Congress
collusion.
Yeah.
Were there illegal things that happened? That's the Mueller investigation. But the second is separate from did the Trump team collude? What the Russians interfered. So what are we doing in a bipartisan way to shore up our election system? And all of the Republican governors in the 35 states that they preside over should be concerned about that.
Oh, sure.
And,
they should. Why in the world? Now, all of a sudden, we're getting a lot of talk about gerrymandering and the rest of it. This is how they got the power. They're not going to give up power easily. So you say they should be concerned about it. Yeah.
But I was also interested. One of the ways that they deal with this is through something called the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which the Republicans are trying to eliminate.
Well, they don't want they don't want anybody other than their voters to vote. You know, and this whole the whole voter fraud thing, and thankfully many states are not really turning over the information, but that's what they're trying to do.
And Joe, I hope in the next half hour we could talk a little bit about Mike Pence inviting people to his Admiral's House there in Washington with big money because
making the money.
Because it smells like I'm running just in case the other guy's out of here.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. He's running. He's getting ready for 2020.
He's lawyered up and he's
ready to go.
Ready to go. Right.
He's ready to go.
And that will make the Donald happy. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah.
Those are two big things.
Rosemary, any final thoughts?
Nope. I enjoyed talking to you all. I miss you, and I'm going to, go sweat some more.
What an image.
All right. Well, we'll be in touch. We'll have you back on very, very soon, and it's been a big treat for all of us. I thank you very much for taking time out of your day. Thank your current employer for lending you to us.
And have a day.
I shooed them all out of the room. Yeah, I'll let them back in now. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Rosemary.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'll be back with more Roundtable after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 10th of July. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue. We had Rosemary Armeo on for the first hour. If you missed that, you can listen to the podcast when it is uploaded a little bit later today. And so we have other things to discuss, which include the issue of health care. But before we do that, Alan has letters.
Some very quick letters. Okay, enjoying the table this AM. I like that. Enjoying the table this AM. Except the snarky comment about the average person not knowing about the G20. I told you what to do. You didn't listen to me, did you, Marietta? You go out and you stand in front of the LCA and you say to the first 100
the
people.
The LOB.
LOB, excuse me. LOB. And you say to the first 50 people or so who pass, what's the G20? And then we'll have this solved, right? So you'll do that for me, won't you, today? And report back tomorrow. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that.
And the LOB is the Legislative Office Building. Yeah. By the way.
But you could go anywhere else, too.
Yes.
You could go out
to County Center.
Or how about the West Stockbridge store?
You can go
anywhere. It's a wonderful place. You know, right in front of the West Stockbridge store. And you could talk to the first, you know. Well, they don't have that many people in Stockbridge. But maybe the first 20 people?
10 or 15.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so it says, not knowing about the G20, rather than use airtime to make fun of people and appear like the liberal elite we are accused of being, why not use those 10 seconds to briefly educate?
So, Alan, what is the G20?
You know, it's this group of these major countries that get together and they talk about economics and other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. I will admit my ignorance on there's the G7, there's the G20, who makes
seven
up those?
Used to be 20. There's 20 used to be 7.
It's the G8. No, it's a G8. It's the top economic powers of the world.
Right.
And then you have... Then you have in the 20, you have those plus 12 more who are in the first world and doing have great GNPs and do have an economic impact on the world's.
And that's overseen by the UN.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
I don't think so. Right. I think it's self-governing.
Okay. Michael says it's in a fair election, the Republicans would never win the popular vote. They know that they need to gerrymander and collusion to win. And Winnie says, it would be terrific if Trump's tax returns could be subpoenaed from the IRS. And that's Winnie in Greenfield Center. Cynthia says, good day. Wasn't Trump under oath on January 20th when he swore to uphold the U.S. Constitution? He lied then. We should hold him responsible. Good morning, panel. Nice to hear you again. Rosemary, I might point out that you cannot expect to inspire more people to participate in our fragile democracy on the one hand while blowing off the legitimate concerns about the DNC's conduct during the 2016 primary. People really are. There are a few people who write us almost every day. And they make a little bit about, you know, their philosophical stance. And they really do compare what happened with the Democratic Party with what's going on with Trump.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
It?
Please take this seriously. Whether you were for Hillary or Bernie, something untoward happened that must be aired and fixed.
All right. Thank you for your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. And just a reminder, that is the address to use. We've been getting some other email to other addresses. Don't do that, because otherwise we won't get it on the air. It has to go to panel at WAMC.org. Just a friendly reminder.
Here at the table.
That's right. Here at the table. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about health care, because it's in Teresa's contract. Let's talk about health care. Senate Republicans return to Washington from a holiday recess with new and deepening disagreements about their health care bill. So what kind of disagreements? John McCain on Face the Nation says, my view is it's probably going to be dead. White House Chief of Staff Ryan Priebus said they will get a repeal and replace bill done. And meanwhile, Senator Bill Cassidy, a Republican from Louisiana, said, I would probably put that as 50-50.
Hmm.
Where are
And Mitch McConnell, you know, he's been out there today saying, look, if you don't, or yesterday, if you don't go along with us, then we the boogeyman, we're going to have to deal
with Chuck Schumer.
They have to actually practice some democracy.
Right. They have to be bipartisan. They have to work together. What a shame.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the big issues they have to deal with is Senator Ted Cruz has this proposal. He calls it the consumer freedom option.
Mm-hmm.
And in that he says if you have, I don't 100% understand it, but if you have one health care option that includes all of the provisions, then you can offer a range of other options. And allows insurers to offer, you know, less expensive, less broad spectrum plans.
So you can choose whether or not to have your pre-existing condition
right.
covered.
And so he is pushing this, saying that this is the great answer to everything because it provides the choice. But this is why you should have hearings on legislative proposals, because the experts are reminding him that if you do that, then what will happen is all of the healthy people will buy the bare bones plans, and the sick people will all be concentrated in this one plan. And then if you have a plan that only contains the sick and the elderly, then that is will be prohibitively expensive. So the plan will be offered but not affordable.
So what do you think happens over the next you brought up a great point during the break of not only do we have this, we have the debt ceiling. So there's a lot of work to be done in a short period of time. It is, after all, the 10th of July.
Right. That's what there's been a deafening silence, or as they say, crickets, no discussion recently on raising the debt limit. And that, I believe, has to be done by early August. There's a timing that requires that because of our bills come due. And the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin has a couple of times said how important it is to do this. This is something that for the last 8 years under the Obama administration, and it happened with the Clinton administration also, the Republicans made this a big issue and tried to negotiate around raising the debt limit. But it's something that should be done. And I don't know how they're going to do it. They also clearly want to pass tax breaks. They can't afford to do that unless they pass a health care bill. But I don't see how they get the votes for a health care bill.
No.
Teresa,
this is such an unpopular bill right now. You really wonder how many people in the Republican Party are going to commit political suicide for something that people don't want. It's that simple.
And you had, I can't remember which was senator said over the weekend that, you know, we talked about this, but we didn't expect to win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's come up over and over again.
Well,
but
they never expected to have to govern again. And that's part of the problem here.
But again, you know, back to Donald Trump's tweets, you have him tweeting out this morning about, I cannot imagine that Congress would dare to leave Washington without a beautiful new health care bill fully approved and ready to go. But he just doesn't have any understanding of how health care works. But the sad news is, on the way in, I heard on the NPR report that in the first 6 months of this year, 2 million people have lost their health care. And, you know, why has that happened? Well, because insurers are pulling out of the market because there's so much market uncertainty.
Exactly.
And who's that causing that market uncertainty?
You know who it is, right?
Donald Trump and the Republicans. That on day one, when he came in, he signed executive orders. One of them had to do with health care and saying that you did not have to get insurance, you weren't going to be fined, and made a number of other changes. And they had until the end of June to provide the insurance market with certainty, and they did not do that. They've held back on required payments. And so there's so much uncertainty in the market, it's driving the prices up and making it harder and harder for people to get insured.
Well, you have such great insights, and this is important. But we did hear from Jackie.
Hi, Jackie.
And Jackie said, loving that return from break music, Rob, but it wasn't Rob.
No,
great
was
Monday
was.
Morning music, thank you. And Sarah LaDuc, our wonderful producer, writes back, hi, Jackie. Today's panel music was chosen by today's board op, Liz Hill. We love Liz Hill. And it's the artist Little Sonny and the new king of blues harmonica, 1995. I thought I'd mention that.
Thank you.
Are you mad at me?
No, I'm just thinking that this is almost the equivalent to going down to the LOB and asking about the G20.
That's
and
right.
I don't care about the G20, but what was that music you played coming in?
Yeah, right. It's true. It's true.
I did learn about the G20 something, though. I looked up.
Oh, what'd you find out?
Because I was stumped on this issue to the UN. I thought, how do I not know that?
Yeah.
But in fact, there are a range of international organizations that support the G20, including the UN, but also the International Monetary Fund. There's a whole host of them, 7 or 8, but there is a each year there's a different leader. This year obviously it was Angela Merkel, but the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, International Monetary Fund, International Labor Organization, they all have staff that are assigned to assist the G20 in their deliberation. So it's not just the UN. So I learned a little something.
We heard from David Oneonta, who said, hi, all in Rosemary. Please remind everyone that the ACA, Obamacare, was found originally a Republican Heritage Foundation plan enacted by Governor Romney in Massachusetts. I remember it well.
Indeed.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And the Democrats weren't that happy about it, but it was a compromise.
And here's another one from a very important listener.
How about that? Compromise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Says, yeah, yeah, yeah. All the political talk is great. Really. But what was the tune played after the last 10 o'clock news break?
That's what you just answered.
Yes, Little Sonny. Little Sonny, new king of blues harmonica.
Members of the G20.
Go ahead.
Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, France, Germany, India, Indonesia, Italy, Japan, Republic of Korea, Mexico, Russia, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Turkey, and the United Kingdom, and the United States, and the European Union. And there are each year guest members.
Wow. And Sarah also answered David Roberts, who wanted to say she's been searching for the artist of a song for over 30 years. You just played a snippet of the song. Sarah added again, artist Little Sonny, new king of blues harmonica, 1995. We know what's important here, folks.
So what happens when the Senate Republicans can't pass a bill, a health care bill, Alan?
They're going to play that harmonica, too.
Seriously, what happens?
What happens when they can't?
Right.
They'll continue to destroy health care from the inside the way they've been doing it all along. And, you know, while Mitch McConnell may threaten to go to the Democrats to work something out, it may actually end up happening because these guys have got to go home, and guys like Heller in Nevada have to go home and face their electorate. And if they say, well, we weren't able to do anything at all, it would be better to work out some kind of compromise with the Democrats, I think.
You know, so much of this comes down to not caring about poor people and people of color and those people who are like them. And so on one hand, they are sending them a death sentence by doing this to their health care, and people are going to be dying in the streets. And then on the other hand, they want to will probably conflate some kind of war, you know.
That's exactly right.
Right. And so to send the same demographic off to fight the white man's war, and ultimately what this will do for them and in their crazy way of thinking is they'll bring that that population, that demographic down, right? Because people will die on either on the streets or in war, and so that they will continue to be in the majority,
okay,
which
so,
is what they are so scared about.
So people who don't have health care, if you really eliminate 22 or 23 million people, then my question would be, you know, I got severely criticized by some guy. We went back and forth several times till I said enough about making the Hitler analogy to Trump. Well, Hitler, you know, the worst of the worst of the worst, did kill, gas all those people, what,
That's
8
right.
million Jews, something like that.
6 million Jews and then lots of other folks.
Lots of other folks. Here's this guy talking about cutting off health care from 23 million people. Come on, do the math.
There's that. There's Hitler also gathered up all the files on people and to know who everybody was. And this is what they're trying to do with the Voter Integrity Act or whatever, you know, the voter integrity work that they're trying to do or so-called, you know, and they want people's social security numbers. I mean, come on. This is the big state, the deep state that Steve Bannon keeps talking about being used against the people and to our detriment.
Besides the horror of people losing access to their health care and all of the challenges that brings, debt and such, the other factor about health care is what an economic driver it is in our country. And I was reminded about that. I'm holding the Albany Business Review. So I
what
know
is
this
that?
Is this is the Albany Business Review. I know it's just this area and the listenership is much broader, but
I know what it is.
But there are 36%, the top 36% employers in the region are in healthcare. St. Peter's,
right.
Albany Med. I mean, you just go through the list, and every region is like that. So it's not only about the welfare of individuals, which is should be the overriding issue, but it's also an economic driver. This will be a real hit to the economy.
Paul Tonko talked about that last night. What's going to happen in Amsterdam, where St. Mary's is the major employer, and they're going to have to fire people because of what they're doing in the healthcare plan? So people will be out of work, which will put more stress on unemployment and other social services that are also being cut.
So, Mark, we heard from Mark. I just wanted to thank you for constantly concentrating on the Russian connection. So far, so good. Here's where it's not so good. The more you do it, the more people you are trying to fool are getting smarter about your true intentions. And that's from Mark.
What's our true intentions?
He didn't say that.
Well, no, but if you read through the responses or if you look at Fox News, this is the thing that it's so interesting to me, is that it's a Rorschach test. I didn't say that word right, but people see it very differently.
Sure. And then we heard from Les with a different opinion. Trump has demonstrated he's incredibly inarticulate. Given that, what could he possibly discuss with Putin for 2 hours? Trump is a national security nightmare. The GOP is collaborating in Trump's treason. They are just as culpable as he is. Les.
All right. We are just about out of time.
No.
I want to thank everyone who wrote to us. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. My thanks to Alan Shartok and thanks to Teresa Bourgeois and to Libby Post. Thank you all. Have a great morning and continue with the day. We're going to continue with our roundtable broadcast after this short break.